Blog Talk Radio.
Press One for Democracy. This is Dan Aronson, your host, here every Monday night at 6 p.m. on the Pacific Coast and 9 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time. Welcome one and all to what I'm hoping will be another great lively conversation, because as I always like to say, nobody wants to sit here and listen to me yap for an hour, hour and a half. This is your show, so we want you to have a chance to stand up and be heard. And to do that, it's real simple. You just dial in at 646-929-2495. And the nice British lady at the IVR will tell you that if you want to join the discussion, just hit 1. A little electronic hand goes up on my board, which tells me you want to get on the conversation. And that's how we move the show along. Tonight's topic, what is the coffee party really about? So I know I've been on the board of directors for a little over a year now, and I know that sometimes we have struggles defining exactly who we are, what we want this movement to be, what it's supposed to be, and aligning what it's supposed to be with what the content that's coming out there to you guys. And I know a lot of times people see, now you say you're one thing, but you're maybe, I don't know, this doesn't look like it's what you're saying. And, you know, so we are working now to realign exactly that. We want our actions and our words to match up to our mission statements, our goals, and our stated principles, so that we can deliver to you, the consumer, if you will, a coffee party that you can be proud of, a coffee party that empowers people at all levels, national, grassroots, and everything in between. Actually, we'll be able to go out there and make a difference or allow you guys to make a difference in politics today, in those things to which we have as a party, as Coffee Party, as an organization, said these are our main objectives, right? So you can't go out there and tackle everything all at once. Sometimes I'm convinced that that's what the media does. They keep changing the conversation and rolling it over so often, keeping us off guard or unable to focus on any one given issue or one given problem long enough to actually fix it. And so that's what we're about. That's what we're trying to accomplish here, is to focus on a few key issues that we feel are overwhelmingly, well, two things. We feel that they're overwhelmingly important, in that if you, they're game changers. If we can change any one of these three things, if we can get a fairer tax code, if we can get money out of politics, if we can get Wall Street reform, that these are huge issues that affect the vast majority of Americans. And they're also huge issues that the vast majority of Americans believe in. They want them. And polling data constantly shows this. Americans want money out of politics. 80% say they don't agree with Citizens United. 72% said we want our legislators to change and find out a way to fix Citizens United, and now of course McCutcheon, right? So most people don't believe that big corporations should be able to hide money in international tax havens like the Grand Caymans or Ireland, and be able to not have to pay their fair share of taxes, while meanwhile our bridges and our schools and our entire infrastructure erodes. Most Americans, that's what they believe. Most Americans are still smarting, no matter what Hillary says. Hillary says we shouldn't bash the bankers. I'm sorry, I'm going to continue to bash the bankers. They rigged the game so that they could privatize the profits but socialize the risks. And when they crashed the economy in 2008, we got left holding the bag. So I'm sorry, until bankers actually start being more pro-consumer and less pro-greed, I'm going to keep bashing bankers, right? And I'm going to keep trying to find out who I can elect that is going to go to Washington and, you know, maybe reenact Glass-Steagall or even worse. Well, I don't want to say worse, but maybe we can put something even stronger into place. So that is really what we're all about. And if we're not delivering that message properly, or if we're delivering a message that runs counter to that, then as a member of the board of directors, I personally want to know about it, and I'm going to do everything I can to stop it. So, again, you can call in here at 646-929-2495. Let me know if we're doing a good job. Let me know if we're doing a bad job, and then let's figure out how to fix it and so we can move forward and re-enter with re-energized base in the coffee party. So with that, I wanted to do as I always do, is just to kind of shape the show or give you a little preview of the show by reading the blog or the Facebook post that I put out there. What is a coffee party really about? As members of the board of directors, we often have to defend a coffee party against people looking to discredit us by misrepresenting who we are and what we are trying to accomplish. At the same time, we have fought against internal forces seeking to hijack the organization and repurpose it to advance their personal political agendas. And I then referenced this beautiful piece that Janine Loudon wrote, and we might, if we're lucky, get her into the conversation and talking about this piece. But she wrote a beautiful piece called "Sometimes a Cup of Coffee is Just a Cup of Coffee." And what Janine does in this piece, if you haven't read it, I let me cut and paste the URL to it here into the chat. Someday I'll have like a real live producer. Keep trying to talk my buddy Greg Rustick into doing it. Actually, he should have his own show. But here's the URL for it. So if you go there and you read this, it takes everything that's really stated on our mission statement page on our website. It talks about our principles. It talks about our mission statement. It talks about our goals. And it puts it into a really gorgeous conversational, boils it down just to the very basic in a conversational way, a beautiful way of restating those purposes, those goals, those missions. Seeing as that we don't have anybody in queue yet, I'll just go ahead and read it to you. Coffee Party USA is one of many affinity groups that emerged from the political cauldron we call 2010. I'm finding 2014 fraught with comparisons between our movement and others forged at that same time. In my mind, we are self-defined, so I offer these words to counter any linguistic sleight of hand that would have you know us by comparing us to others. Our name implies that if Americans sat down and had a cup of coffee in a cafe or at a living room coffee table, we would find a spark of common ground. High praise for the people? No, just our experience. Inciting civility and reason. Finding how we are alike rather than how we are different requires the generosity of spirit to listen and speak with respect, to be civil. The other essential piece is data. Good data, so our ability to reason has a chance to emerge from the chaos of emotions that defines politics these days. The trend to emotionalize political conversation may have morphed since 2010, but it has not stopped. Our membership, as well as many supporters and followers, have looked at why this is possible. That has led us to the cycle of corruption. More than anything, Americans want justice, equity, and fairness. And the cycle of corruption is not fair. Now, this is where you need to actually be looking at the blog, because there's a beautiful graphic on there. And the graphic shows the cycle of corruption, which is really simple. It's funny. It's a three-step cycle. And it's basically power equals policy equals money equals power. So politicians set policies for their wealthy donors. Their wealthy donors give them more money. That more money enables them to stay in office. Start again, rinse, lather, repeat. It's not something we want to do. I guess rinse, lather, repeat is kind of a good thing if you like clean hair, but I don't mean it to sound like a good thing, but that is it. It's that simple. And we are trying to break this. So rather than believe government is inherently bad, we believe government is broken. Again, our membership followers and supporters came up with the focus issues to repair the Republic's democracy. Everything we do ties back to one of three things: campaign finance reform, tax code reform, Wall Street reform. Today, we collectively see the first campaign finance reform, getting money out of politics, is job one. This drives us to seek and vet the massive amounts of information and misinformation available today. This drives us to cafes and living rooms, to social media and blogs like this one, to have a cup of coffee and talk about what we have found. This is Coffee Party. Whether we appear in agreement with or in opposition to some of their groups is in the mind of the beholder and irrelevant to who we are in the world. Coffee Party on, Janine Loudon, Managing Director. So when Janine first proposed posting this on our website, I said, how fast can you get it up there? I think this is a beautiful thing. And then how can we leverage it further to make sure that people understand who we are and who are not, right? So putting this into the Facebook post, if Janine doesn't mind, I'm gonna get her mic hot, because I don't know if, hi Janine, how are you this evening?
Hey, I'm great. Big power outage in this part of the valley, but I am untouched, so we're golden.
Very nice. I don't know if you had a chance to like look through the comments on the blog. I'm sorry, on the Facebook post. But it's funny because it proved exactly what we were saying. And all of these people that come out here, all the ones that you label, I love that, the mischief makers, are all out here telling us, oh, that's not you. You're not that. You're crazy. And I'm sitting here trying to go, no. Okay, that one's legit. I'm just trying to answer all of these mischief makers and proving to them that we're either – not what they say we are, or we're working hard to fix some of the issues that we've been having.
Oh yeah, I've been following the post, and it is really interesting because I think, just like this Republic's democracy is a work in progress, I think the whole notion of transpartisanship, that conversation is a work in progress. It's not a muscle that we've been trained to use. And so there's sometimes exercise fatigue, you know what I'm saying? And I think there's also a lot to be said for who we would be, you know? And I don't think stumbling or falling will negate who it is we say we are in the world. And so, you know, some people... You know, it's kind of a glass half empty, glass half full situation. Are we perfect? No. Do we strive? Always. And I think that that's exactly where the people of America are, is trying to turn the Titanic, so to speak, to a different kind of conversation, one that's more problem-solving oriented and one that's less emotionally charged.
No, I could not agree with you more. I mean, I'm constantly telling people that either that I work with or that I, you know, in my activist life or in all parts of my life, I always tell them the same thing. I go, look, I'm going to make mistakes. I've made mistakes before, and I guarantee you I'm going to make mistakes again. I'm going to learn from them, and I'm going to try to do my best to make them right, and I'm going to move on. And if you're expecting perfection, you're looking in the wrong place.
Oh, exactly. And it's like perfection is not necessarily what we're seeking. What we're seeing is a change in attitude. And this piece was born out of my participation in a Coffee Party volunteer call. And so one of the things that when you get past the here's the how to become a volunteer, here's the volunteer opportunities, then you start having a conversation with people. They ask questions. And one of the things they always say is, who are you really? And or I see this and I see that, or are you this, are you that? It happens every time, and it's a wonderful conversation. But it occurred to me in the most recent volunteer call that it really was simple, that we were a product of 2010, and those of us who were engaged back then, remember, it was just chaotic. there was a lot of things, there was a lot of fires burning and a lot of words being thrown around. And while most of the motivation was probably totally legitimate, a lot of the execution was dysfunctional or degrading, or, you know, it was just a lot of mean-spirited mischief was going on. And, you know, I felt at the time like I was drowning in posts and comments and articles, and, you know, everything was polarized or sharpened to some talking point. And it's actually my sister who said, you know, try this. Look at this, like a coffee party. And it's like I've said before, it like saved my life, because it helped me understand the whole conversation, helped me understand that while I may have strong feelings about some things and frankly no feelings about others, I just don't need to take this all personally, and I don't need to activate the thing in other people that I'm speaking to or writing to that triggers their taking it personally. That we really do have more in common than not, and that ultimately, wherever you stand on some political spectrum in any given issue, there is a civil and reasonable conversation to be had, and data comes from many places. So we're presuming that many people would participate if that information exchange is really going to be valid, you know, as opposed to preaching to the choir or whatever. And I think this is an experiment worth continuing. I think that this is an attitude we're fostering. And frankly, I think this is closer to what it will take to solve the problems we share than what was happening prior to now.
No, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, yes, you're preaching the choir. But, I think it all – well, it doesn't all center on transpartisan, but I think transpartisanship is where it starts, because it gives us the blueprint for how we engage and what our – and it sets our expectations. I mean, civility, that can be difficult at times. Obviously, we're all prone to anger, fits of anger. At least most of us are. I know I am. I have that ability to get really angry really quickly. And so civility is obviously very important, because obviously – as soon as you start yelling at somebody, they turn you off and the conversation's over. So it's kind of weird that we have to state it, because it also seems to be a no-brainer. Communication breaks down totally when people are just – when volume increases. The whole idea of transpartisanship is we have to look for those things in common. You know, and I always – you know, the ones that are there are so obvious, again – you know, and we have people on there going, well, people on the right don't want to talk to people on the left about anything, and vice versa. And I'm like, wait a second, sit down with somebody and talk about crony capitalism, and ask them if they like crony capitalism. Who likes crony capitalism? Well, other than the cronies, right? You know, who likes drone strikes? Who likes, you know, NSA spying? Who likes Citizens United? I mean, we have so much in common, and if we could just focus on those things. And I think it's, you know, I take it to the next highest level. I see it as the only way we're ever going to solve our problems, because I just don't see – I mean, look at – we have a Congress that's got a single-digit approval rating. And we've got – it right? But yet, look at the number of seats that the pollsters say are up for grabs. It's virtually none. It's such a small percentage of seats that are for grabs. Now, how is that possible? People tell me the same thing. Well, Dan, everybody says their guy's great. It's the other guys who stink. Well, man, that's so myopic of you. I cannot believe that the majority of voters think that way. And we have a couple of people that want to weigh in on that. So I'm going to bring in Stephen, our good friend Stephen Vandergast. How are you, sir?
I am good, sir. And if you want to go to – I feel like I'm crashing your party over here. If you want to go to other callers before me, that's completely okay.
You, sir, you are always welcome. Never a party crasher. You have an open invite.
Okay. Well, you know, well, I'm new to the coffee party, and I've been checking you guys out, and I've really been, you know, turned on by some of the things. You know, it's like when I hear you guys on Blog Talk Radio and a lot of different there's definitely a disconnect, I think, between what you guys are talking about and what I've seen on your page. When I first got there, I was like, you know, I was kind of falling victim of my own, you know, preconceived notions and not appreciating the fact that you guys have a lot of people on that page. And you guys are speaking to a problem that I speak to, which is basically trying to get beyond all that. So, I mean, I just wanted to say from my perspective, you know, you guys are doing a good faith job, and I think doing a really good job. And I've noticed just even over the past couple of days a difference not only in the tone of the posts, but it seems like where I first went there and it was all very one-sided and very much not constructive. Coming there today, it seems like there's some more exchange, there's some more back and forth, and just you guys, I think, have a long way to go, and I am learning from watching you guys and realizing that, you know, you want to have a whole lot of people there, but you really have to keep them on lockdown because, and I think we all do this, and this is something that we need to change. We all think, okay, well, you said something nice about that group, so all of a sudden you are everything that that group represents to me, regardless of what they really represent. So you guys have quite a battle ahead of you, but I think you guys are doing a fantastic, fantastic job. So that was just my two cents.
Well, no, I appreciate that. First of all, you're such a welcome voice here, did you call yourself a liberal Republican the other day, a Republican-tarian?
A conservatarian. I'm fiscally conservative and socially libertarian.
Right, and I will say this. I mean, in our defense slash maybe, I don't want to make an excuse, but I mean, like, for instance, I'm just looking at our stats here for the week. I mean, we have a reach of almost 2 million people. When you have that many, and we have almost a 500,000 likes on our page, and so we cannot take responsibility for the commenters. I almost wish there was a way we could designate on the Facebook page that when somebody posts, like a little button would come up that says, this is a coffee party member, or this is a coffee party, you know, volunteer or board of directors member, just so that people could see that, you know, the people who are members have a pretty good set of ideas, or a pretty solid set of ideas, and are in step, whereas the people that come in who are just trolling, or as Janine likes to call them, mischief makers, you know, they don't represent Coffee Party, you know, and they'll often tell us, oh, you're not that, and you're not this, and, you know, you don't believe that. So I would hope that people concentrate on the posts themselves. Our content creators, and we have, boy, I don't know, Janine, what, we have must have a dozen content creators now?
Yeah, I think there's about 12 to 14 people who have posting privileges, and of those, at least 9 or 10 of them post virtually every day. And, you know, this is an interesting conversation because when you crowdsource information like this, you do get a variety of voices. And the idea is, on the one hand, not to engage in too much censorship, and on the other hand, not to, you know, have the boat list. And it is a challenge, and so I appreciate the input. You know, I certainly have learned a lot having become a content creator in Facebook, and I've learned I need to be so careful. You know, first to witness my own bias, then to eliminate my own bias, or to clearly state my own bias, and then ask, and you. Half of my posts end up with, and you. I really honestly want to know what other people think. And I try to find credible sources, or if I use memes, I try to use memes that I can 100% verify. And, you know, so every mistake possible, from misspelling words to leaving someone out to a meme with a misspelled word to, I mean, we've made all those mistakes too. But, yeah, crowdsourcing is an interesting gig.
If I could just say something about that additionally, I think that, you know, it's and to your last point, I am increasingly ending my posts with, and, of course, I could be wrong. And that's just got to be my catch-all to say, like, you know what, I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, you know, to politely say, hey, come challenge me, come, you know, do whatever, you know, come engage. But you make some good points about, you know, when you have this many people, and I think, you know, that kind of speaks to the problem. I am recently trying to put together an organization, and it's weird to me to see all the dynamics that come into play, but increasingly I just think about, you know, so you have this environment where you have this whole diverse group of people, and some people are there to cause a problem, and some people are there in good faith, and the people that are there in good faith are tired, I mean, honestly, of going through all the muck that it takes to get to find the reasonable people. And in your group, in my group, in America, I think we need to make a part of our philosophical mission statement. Maybe that's something Coffee Party might think about offering to, you know, this is what we stand for, is that if you're here, we self-regulate here. And I like the idea of identifying Coffee Party members, but at the same time, you know, I might be a Coffee Party member, and I'm going to talk from a completely different angle and about completely different priorities than a different Coffee Party member. So rather than identifying them even that way, just say, no, if we're here, we self-regulate. So everybody knows on whatever part of the spectrum you're on, that's not the game we play here. This is for adults. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah.
I like the adults on it. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you bring up good points, and actually what we're trying to do is expand our editorial staff, Stephen, to the point where we can actually regulate. In all honesty, I mean, self-regulation is great, but – you know, you can't make everybody an administrator on your page, right? So we already have filters in place to take out swear words and the real ugly words, the, you know, Republicans and, you know, libtards and all that stuff. So we got those in place. And then we're working to increase our editorial staff so that we can be on the post on a regular basis and, you know, honestly either hide or even delete or, in the extreme cases, ban somebody from the page. You know, who has come there again, as Janine would like to say, just to make mischief. So as Janine says, it's a work in progress, and we've got a really good core of people, including the person I'm going to open the microphone right now, Debbie Lynn Molyneux. Welcome to the show. One of our great core of people, and I came up. I was thinking about how to introduce you. And what would you think about the title of the Princess of Transpartisanship?
I don't like being a princess, but turn that into a queen and I'll take it.
All right, Queen of Transpartisanship, you've got it. You've been promoted.
Yeah, princesses don't have power, queens do. So.
Yeah, so by the way,
about, for those... being able to do something.
Okay, fair enough. So by the way, for those of you listening, given the nature of the show and the subject matter of the show, if you have comments and you want to get right to the top, you now have three of the nine board of directors of the Coffee Party USA on this phone. So if you have comments and if you have concerns, if you have questions, if you have suggestions, whatever it is, I urge you to dial in at 646-929-2495 because you got one third of the board of directors here at Coffee Party. So again, 646-929-2495, and let us know what you think. So how are you this evening, Debbie Lynn, and how can we be of service?
I am doing quite well, thank you. Just interesting conversation for tonight. I of course loved what Janine wrote. And because it really resonates for me, what Coffee Party is for me. And I think part of what we're trying to do tonight also is open up the conversation of what is Coffee Party for you. This is how we're envisioning Coffee Party, but what is Coffee Party for you? And where are we in alignment so that we can focus on where it is that we agree, that's where things start, and we can build our relationships with each other, so that later on we can have the conversations about the difficult things where we disagree. But we have to have a relationship first.
No, absolutely. And that's very funny. So that's an inside joke, everybody. Don't worry about it. And that's an interesting thing. And it's difficult to do in this kind of an atmosphere, but at least we have, you know, one-on-one, we have back and forth, we have feedback, we have real-time conversation. It's even harder to do, obviously, in an environment like a Facebook or a social media conversational type blog. And it's really, really hard to do. And this is where the two women on this phone call that I'm with have just taught me so much in the year and a half I've been around them about how to craft a blog post so that it is in line with not simply that it's just in line with the coffee party messaging, but so that it stimulates conversation in that transpartisan civil way. And you know, after that, you know, so I really take care when I craft my messaging to do that. If something else happens, I can't be responsible, obviously, for what the other people say. But I mean, just taking time and thinking about the way you communicate with people and setting the proper tone just gets us so much further down the road to begin with.
And I want to check on to that, that includes, I mean, we talk in our own, in the language of our political tribe without thought. And there was one time back in 2009, I was at a conference, and it was attended largely by progressives. And one of the guest speakers there was Max Pappas from, Freedom Works. It's a group, a Tea Party group that everybody hates. Freedom Works. So Max Pappas was there. He's a really nice guy. And I remember him sitting there talking with us. And he said, I know you guys are saying the words, you know, like freedom and liberty, but whatever it is that you mean by that, I can tell that it's not the same thing that I mean. And I have no idea what you're talking about. And that just really opened up our eyes. And so one of the things that I try to do when I am crafting messaging out there is I try to use language that is neutral, that hasn't been co-opted or code-worded by anybody, and ask questions, because I really do want to know what people think. I have that curiosity about how did you come to be the beliefs that you have. So, Stephen, you know, when you start, you know, talking about freedom and liberty or another, some other topic, I have questions for you because I really want to know. And it's not so that I can argue with you and prove I'm right. That's just a bad habit the media has taught us to score points. And I don't care about scoring points. I really want to know you.
Well, I appreciate that. I encourage a lot of people to get to know me. But it is, you know, that's absolutely right. It's the tone. It's the position. And this happens across the spectrum. It's that position of, you know, I'm engaging with you, but I'm engaging with you from a position that I'm right absolutely, and I'm not engaging with you to learn anything or because I want clarity. I'm engaging with you because that'll give me an opportunity to prove that I'm right, and I know more than you. And I think even more so today, people are just it very quickly turned off. And there was a op-ed piece that was written that I had critiqued on the coffee party, and I'm not sure who all sees that. But there were just so many little things in that were just immediate turnoffs. And the right does it too. And I've learned that you know lesson too, that it's there's things where one example is the term trickle down economics. And as soon as I hear the term trickle down economics, I'm probably going to reject most of what the person has to say, because that's a term that I view as a pejorative invented by the left that they then use to describe an economic situation that is not what, you know, the original economic theory that they misrepresented with. And so, I mean, that's just one example. You, and I can do that too. There's things that I'll call it socialism. I'm probably misusing that term, or I'll call things, or Obamacare. I've quit using the term Obamacare. That's something that the right came up with to use as a pejorative. And even though Obama has owned it, it's still just a ticky-tacky thing to do. And there's so many of those. I mean, there's so many things that we just don't even think about. And far too often, we don't get an opportunity to have like this, to have reasonable people talk back and forth. And it's a difficult thing to do, and tone, and just showing that good faith. And good faith is tough to develop. And I just recently had a conversation with a very good friend of mine that after about 2 hours went downhill pretty fast. And it was only because of years and years and years of friendship and good faith that we were able to have that huge back and forth. And we just don't have that even with our neighbors, much less, you know, the mass community out into the world, I mean, on the internet. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. The internet, of course, is the place where so many people like to get, like to be uncivil and let their inner demons out because they can be anonymous or they never have to meet the person. And it's so much harder to be talking with someone face to face, I think, and be uncivil and disrespectful. Not that it can't happen, but it's harder. And, you know, and that's one of the things that I really love about working with Living Room Conversations is that it's actually inviting people to be civil in that one-on-one, face-to-face conversation about a topic that we may not, that we may have different perspectives on. And that's where we grow and learn. And I just remember, you know, growing up, you know, having those big family get-togethers at the holidays. And we just had fun. It wasn't about, you know, okay, there was a little tension between a couple of people, but that was over, there was a power struggle over some family dysfunction. It wasn't because politics, somebody watches Fox News and somebody else watches MSNBC, and so we can't have a conversation, you know, which just seems to me to be the silliest thing to be upset with your family members about. It's politics. It's not personal. It's just politics.
Yeah, but I would tell you that, DL, unfortunately, I've just seen this trend to not only personalization of everything, but combativeness. You know, I call it the MMA effect. You know, we used to have boxing where you have all these rules, and these guys go in and they can only hit the guy with their fists and only certain parts of their fists, and they have big fat gloves on, so they can't hurt each other, but they don't really have to. And that now that's given way to this MMA where these guys go into a cage and it's like surrounded by the crowd and they're screaming and yelling and there's virtually no padding and it's wrestling and I'm going to get you in an arm bar or choke you out and you're going to tap out. And it's just the level of vitriol in our society, it's almost like it's almost parallel to, you know, the Roman Empire, right? It's like we just want more blood, more, you know, and everything's adversarial, and it's kind of scary. It doesn't surprise me that it bleeds over into our politics. It scares me a little bit, but it doesn't surprise me. But I think we're the counter to that, and I think that makes our mission even quadruply more important. And I see we have a new caller in queue, 727. We're going to get to you right after we hear a little bit about other Coffee Party Radio shows, because, of course, this is not the only one.
Hi, this is Dan Aronson, and you're listening to Press One for Democracy, heard here every Monday night on Coffee Party Radio starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party Radio shows that airs each week? On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the newest edition of our Coffee Party Radio family joins us on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's Bud Fields with Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495 so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day, the Coffee Party way.
So welcome back to Press One for Democracy. This is Dan Aronson, as the nice man on the radio said, which was me, of course. And we are going to 727. 727, your mic, in a second, is hot. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Marianne in the Tampa Bay area. Hi, Stephen. He's in the Tampa Bay area also. Anyway, I am a regular listener, and I very rarely call in. I'm shy, I guess. But I thought tonight was appropriate that I call in because I've been feeling like a user. I listen, and I learn from you so much. I have so long. I think it's about time I chimed in. But anyway, I'm a follower and supporter of the Coffee Party in ways that I feel that I can do. You guys are all teaching me so much to talk to people who disagree with me. Debbie Lynn, I liked what you said before, that we tend to talk in our political tribes without thought. I think I might be guilty of that, but I'm learning from you guys. But one thing I'd like to ask is, Debbie Lynn especially, when people are discussing politics, I find that people are, in my circles anyway, and I think it's why I become emotional, people make terrible racist comments and what I feel are mean-spirited, and it hurts me, and I think that's where I lose it. So I'm just going to see what you guys think about that.
Well, I have a question for you, and it's Marianne, right? Not Marianne.
Marianne, yeah.
Marianne, okay, good. Thank you. I wanted to make sure I got that right. Do you tell them when they hurt your feelings that that's what's happening?
I have actually, yes. And these
what
are
happened?
Supposedly friends. They belittle me. I am known in my friend circle as they use that liberal word like it's a dirty word.
Mhm. So yeah. They're condescending and belittling.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Well, you know, that's a really hard situation, Marianne, and I don't know of a way to like say this and it's going to be all better. It's more for me. I mean, this is part of what Coffee Party is about, and I just want to state this very clearly. One of the biggest things that I think Coffee Party is for is to create that safe space where we can have these conversations and we can practice and build up not only our transpartisan muscle of being able to talk to anybody, but also build up our the thickness of our skin a little bit.
Yeah.
When I remember when I first ran for office about 10 years ago, and I was so terrified of people criticizing me or thinking I was dumb that I would go and I would literally knock on doors and I would say like two sentences and then I would just shut up and I would listen to them. Well, as a campaign strategy, that was really easy to do because I didn't have to say a whole lot or tell them necessarily what I believed in. And I learned a whole lot because I got to listen to what the constituents really wanted in the neighborhood. But I was doing it out of fear instead of out of consciousness. And when I listen out of consciousness, I have a whole different level of listening than when I'm listening out of fear. And when people are saying mean, racist things, the first thing that I always have to tell myself is that this says more about them than it does about me. You know, just like this whole big hullabaloo right now with Donald Sterling and the LA Clippers. His team is not a reflection of the comments he made. The comments that he, and assuming that it's him, because again, it's not been proven yet that he was the one on the tape. But whoever was making those comments on the tape, they're the person that has the problem, that is feeling threatened, rather than somebody who's open-hearted and understands the value of humanity. And so I really just, you know, I try to hold them with grace because they're in a place of fear. And then I correct and say, you know, that's not allowed in my world. I don't go there. You know, I remember a long-term relative, you know, a distant relative that I met in Virginia one time that started talking to me about Daughters of the Civil War. And I just started immediately talking about how much I love diversity in California. That's one of the reasons I live there, blah, blah, blah. She shut the hell up immediately because she knew I was not a safe person to have that conversation with.
I like what you said about they're in a place of fear. It's not.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. And
yeah,
so,
they're afraid of losing their privilege. Yeah, they're losing their privilege, they think. They think they're losing their privilege if they, you know, admit that everybody is equal.
I think it's also about, I think Debbie Lynn made a couple of good, you know, suggestions. Like, first of all, setting expectations, right? So, like, if somebody that I don't know wants to start talking politics, you know, there's nothing wrong with calling a timeout and saying, okay, I will talk politics with you, but here are the ground rules of our conversation. Can we agree to these ground rules? And then you can go forward. As for things that are, like, when you talk about racism, you know, I have this thing about racism. I mean, to me, anytime I run into something that is born of ignorance or rote brainwashing, I always stop and I say, how did this person get to be this way? And I try to understand why they are what they are and why they think what they think. You know, and when you talk about things like racism, you're talking about, I mean, to me, it's passed down like a family. Racism is passed down like a family heirloom. It's something that's learned in the home. You know, 99% of the time, it's drilled into their heads from the time they can speak. And they go out, and at some point, they'll say something to some other kid, and that kid will go, "That's racist." And they'll go, "Wait, what? It is? Wait, you're saying there's something wrong with what I'm saying?" I mean, at some point, they don't even, you know, they still don't even know they're saying anything wrong. So you kind of have to go with I go with the open-ended questions. Why do you feel that way? You know, and that will bring out the why they feel that way, and then maybe it gives you some room to work with. Just a thought. Do you need any thoughts?
Well, the main thing for me is that racism for me is a subset of all groups that people have given social permission to denigrate. And so I'm very uncomfortable with any denigrating speech, whether it doesn't matter. I could go through a list, but then I'd be contributing to that. And I do, sometimes I'm able to be very open-minded with people, and sort of that was just in the language. It was in the vernacular of their world, and it just, you know, it washes by me. But with anything that's hateful about anyone, I kind of just put my hand up and say, you've got to find a way to talk to me that isn't so hateful. I can't hear it.
I just can't hear it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I want to know what you think, but please, you know, this just hurts my heart to hear this kind of speaking about another human being. And that's all you can do. And the other thing is, I believe in the escape route, which is if people really want to make you feel uncomfortable because you're not something enough, cool enough, or smart enough, or I don't know what it is, to tolerate this kind of speaking, just say, oh, gosh, I hear my mother calling, you know, walk away. Because I just, you know, you find an appropriate exit strategy because they're not there to communicate with you.
My exit strategy, and Stephen will get a kick out of this, is when they do that, I always say, how about them bucks? And they know that that's how about those bucks, the Buccaneers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think only Stephen would get that. But
the host of the show is a football guy. I knew what you're talking about. But you know what? We've got some diversity here, and I want to ask Stephen a question. I want to bring him back into the conversation. Now, Stephen, I've seen your Facebook post. I've never met you in person, but you seem like a pretty big, imposing, physical guy. Do people ever pull that with you, or are they too scared? And if they do pull that with you, what's your way of reacting and dealing with it?
Specifically for, like, racism?
Yeah. Or any hate speech.
You know, I'm a pretty friendly guy. I started out, you know, on the left, and so I like to think in general I kind of have an understanding of those things that, you know, those philosophical values that the left has. So typically when I'm talking to the left, I can find some common ground. When I was young, I was a volunteer at Planned Parenthood at Vine Street Clinic in Denver, and I worked a line that separated the crazies from the people coming in. And so, I mean, I was very much as active in that side as I was on this side. So I can, I like to think that in general, I can try to find, you know, at least have a conversation and talk in terms that you know, everybody can agree on somewhat. The racism thing, and it's weird because I believe it was Janine's comments. I'm sorry, I'm not great with names. Talking about how the owner of the Clippers and saying, you know, he's cast with a, you know, he's just one guy and he's not reflective of the whole organization. And it's like sometimes as a Republican, I feel like I'm cast with the entire group. You know, so it's refreshing to hear her say that. And I hope that you know, and I'm a Republican, obviously, and I'm a man of faith, but I appreciate what the religious right is. And I'm having my own battles with them, separate from the conversations on that. And so they say a lot of just incredibly stupid things. And sometimes it feels like they, you know, they'll play like, look at that Republican, and that's all of you. Or even like Clive Bundy, who, as far as I know, is not even a registered Republican or whatever. But it's like, yeah, you're all like him. So it's like, I definitely am. I feel like that is most conservatives when talking with the left. And the racism thing is an interesting thing because I'm a white male American, and that's all I've ever known. And I grew up in middle America suburbia, and then we had a couple of black kids in our school, and to me they were the couple of black kids in our school, and we had a couple of Vietnamese kids in our school, and we had a couple other kids in our school. And I grew up, and sometimes people say, well, you're just, you know, you don't have enough black friends, or you mention them because for whatever reason, I don't know. But it's like, well, that's the life I know. And for me, it's funny because it's like everybody who's ever screwed me over was a white guy. You know, every politician that's ever lied to me almost was a white guy. It's not until the last recent elections. But I have no loyalty to anything other than logic and common sense. And what do you do with stupid people? You know, try to understand. I'm sure if they're a good friend, try to get down to the heart of the issue. But stupidity needs to be checked at every turn. And in my opinion, aggressively and in full display for everybody else. If I'm calling out an idiot on Facebook, I'm not even calling out that idiot necessarily for their sake. I'm calling it out so everybody else understands. You know, I'm not having a conversation about stupidity. And I have a long list, and you can pick your flavor. I have a long list of American heroes. And if you want to come at me from some particular demographic that I hate, I'm prepared to list to you that particular demographic's American hero that I like. And I'll check stupidity every single step of the way. And that's what we need to do. That's what we have been soft on, in my opinion, across the world.
You know, Stephen, what I love about what you're saying is the I'm sorry, Dan, I just totally stole that from you. We're trying to incite civility and reason. And the thing that, you know, with what you're classifying as stupidity, we might classify as ignorance or uneducated or, you know.
You are a lot more tolerant on the left. I'll give you that.
And I'm an independent. I am like you, fiscally conservative, socially progressive.
I apologize.
So thank you very much. I try to speak in all languages. But it is, you know, it is how we ourselves are being in the moment with that person with whom we think is stupid or uninformed or ignorant that will set the tone for how our country goes. And this is the part that I think so many people have trouble understanding is that, yes, we need to be educated. Yes, we need to find a way that we can agree on facts. But if we treat each other with disrespect and with condescension, then that is what we are going to have all throughout our culture. And it changes one person at a time. Every one of us has our responsibility for this.
Yeah, and that's why I get back to saying what I was saying is instead of necessarily judging that person immediately when they say something, whether you call it stupid or ignorant or hate-filled or whatever it is, I always want to go, you know what, you're an onion, and I'm going to peel back some layers, and I want to find out exactly why you're the kind of onion you are, because it's you got to get down to, the heart of the matter. Now, that's if you care to. You know, there's always a point where you're going to reach in a conversation where you're just going to go, you know what, this is not going to work out well. There's 219 million eligible voting Americans. You're just one of them. I'm going on to the next one and say thank you for the conversation and walk away. I mean, at some point that becomes the only real sane alternative, Marianne.
Yeah. It is.
So I hope this has helped you out some bit. Or do you have other questions?
I don't, and everything that I've been saying has definitely helped me out a lot.
Glad to be of service. That's what we're here for. That's why we do these things. And we appreciate you being a supporter of the coffee party and to whatever extent you do. And please come back and call as often as you'd like. We love having you.
Oh, I'm always listening.
That's good. Well, somebody's got to be checking us, so perfect. Appreciate it. That's Marianne from Tampa Bay, and you're listening to Press for Democracy coming up on the top of the hour. Again, this is your show. This is your chance to be heard. Everybody loves listening to Janine and Debbie Lynn. Me, not so much. So why don't you get if you want to get in on the conversation and you want to grab the microphone and tell us how you feel, just give us a holler at 646-929-2495. And when you get into the queue, hit 1 on your phone, and we will know then that you want to get into the conversation. So, that was kind of fun, DL. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's your gig right there, helping people become more transpartisan communicators.
Mm-hmm.
That was
right. And I want to point out that transpartisan doesn't mean you give up your party. All it means is that you're willing to move above and beyond your party for the sake of the country. It's like putting your country first instead of the party. And so much of what I see out in the today, and you know, especially in media, because the media focuses on the train wreck, is about people who are choosing to put their party before the country. And that just drives me nuts. It's like we're all in this together. Come on, people.
I'm totally with you. And we had a bunch of those comments coming through on the Facebook page going, well, I'm a partisan and I'll always be a partisan. And I go, I hope you are a partisan. That is wonderful. Partisan means passion, and it is passionate people that stand up to make a difference. So, yay, be partisan. The trick of transpartisanship is to have another person also partisan, not the same as you, and to be able to sit down and have a conversation, find the common points of interest, and then find the fixes for those common points of interest. Sometimes people say coffee party is a name that allows us to be misunderstood. Some people think that we're the anti-Tea Party movement, you know, that we're the progressive Tea Party, whatever it is. Sometimes I think transpartisanship is almost one of those words that is just too easily misinterpreted, right?
So one of my favorite radio show hosts, I used to go on and talk about transpartisan. He'd get to the word as he's reading the promo, you know, for the next bit for me coming up, and he'd go, and she's here to talk about the transportation, transsexual, transpartisan. I just would just die because it was like, okay, got it, whatever. it's a funny word.
Right, somebody asked me one time if this was a Bob Barker word, did it have something with spaying and neutering your pets? I mean, it was just awful, but it was hysterical because I thought a Bob Barker term, I really like that. But, you know, we've tried on different terms to mean the same thing, the willingness to listen to people who've hung a different shingle out, you know what I mean, in the front yard. And I don't know a better one, and maybe the fact that it's awkward makes us have to talk about it, and because we have to talk about it, we get a little better at explaining the notion, and I think that's all good. I really do. I also think how you deal with people is a little bit cultural. You know, Marianne was talking about Tampa Bay, and other people have talked about different parts of the country, but, you know, the three of us are from the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, it would be socially acceptable to say something like, dude, you have really missed the mark if you think you're actually talking to me. You know? So, I like the thing about onions, and I like the thing about, you know, getting to know people or expressing ways that you're well communicated with. And then how you sort of, I'm not saying talk to the hand, but I mean how you let people know that they've crossed the line that they need to back up from really varies from little societal ecosystem to little societal ecosystem. And I think I have the hardest time when I'm talking to someone who's not from my world. You know, and I don't mean my world like what party or gender or economic status. I mean literally my part of the world. Because the same words mean different things, and the Pacific Northwest has its own culture, and Hawaii has its own culture, and you know, there are 100,000 cultures across America, and I think the hardest part is to be actually sensitive to and respectful of all of them, and in order, you know, to actually speak to whomever you're speaking.
I think, Janine, that's why it's so essential that we ask questions. We stop trying to rebut whatever people are saying or what we think they're saying and ask questions and be curious. I learned so much from asking questions, so much. It's a rich, rich world out there when I do that.
As a sales guy, I mean, that's sales 101. You can always tell a newbie salesman because they'll meet somebody and they'll just go right into their pitch. They'll launch into the pitch. Whereas the veteran salesperson knows that sits down and asks questions to find out what it is the customer actually wants. You know, that's kind of important, and that speaks very much to what you were saying, Janine, about culture, right? And getting back to my, why are you like that? That's the whole idea. Is like, let me understand you, so now I can tailor what I want to say so that it's A, it makes sense to you, and B, it doesn't offend you, right? Because that's a cultural thing, right? Some people, you know, you can say one word to somebody and it'll be like, you know, oh, I can't believe you said that. And they say another word to somebody and go, so what? So, yeah, I mean, it's you're absolutely right, Debbie Lynn. I mean, questioning, ask the questions, take the time, get to know the person, set the ground rules if you've got the opportunity to, you know. And the other thing is you got to temper your expectations. And you got to know that you're just not going to be able to have a meaningful conversation with everybody you talk to. And
right. So
don't get disappointed or frustrated or upset because it's not going that well. Just go, okay, again, time to move on. All right, we have another caller in queue. We're going to open the mic. Skype caller 111111. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with? Their mic didn't
open. They are muted.
I'm trying again. 111111. Sorry about that.
Okay.
You are unmuted. Who are we speaking with?
My name is Joe.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Okay.
Where are you calling from?
Montana.
Okay, Joe, we seem to get a lot of feedback and static from your headset.
Yes, you
or is
are.
Is that just me?
No, that's me.
Okay, you want to try to call back in?
No, I can't. The way this phone is, that's the way it's going to be. So, sorry about that. So the hum is there. Either I can talk to you for a few seconds, or we can hang up if the hum is too bad.
Well, go ahead and shoot. We'll deal with it for a couple of seconds. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to find out what the coffee party is about. It seems to me that, according to your diagram, you're cherry-picking from the Democrats, the Republicans, the Independents. So it seems to me like you want a little bit of government. You want a little bit of foreign affairs. You want a little bit of people paying for other people's misfortunes. Am I on the right track?
No, not at all. I'm just going to mute you while we go ahead and respond to that to get rid of the hum. So the coffee party is not a political party. We're not cherry picking from anyone. Here's what we're about. I'll say it the way I say it, and then I'll ask Debbie Lynn and Janine to jump in and give their opinions. There are two parts to any political approach. One is, what is your philosophy? What are your stances on the issues, right? So what is it I'm trying to accomplish? To the coffee party, that's important, but it's just as important as how you go about accomplishing those things. How do you go about having those discussions? So we're really more facilitators than we are necessarily partisans. We're coming from all over the place, but what we are is we're people who care as much about how the conversation goes and what the ultimate end result we want is than just winning or losing. So with that, I'll quit babbling and ask Debbie Lynn to say it, and I'm sure she's going to be much more eloquent than I.
Actually, I think Janine's got an answer for this one.
Thanks. So listen, here's the bottom line. We want Americans to make decisions about their country, like what should the size of government should be? What should the role of government be? How should public funds be collected? How should public funds be spent? Should we enter into trade agreements with other nations? Should we have a social safety net? All of those are questions that you and I may agree on or disagree on, but here's the truth. Neither you nor I have a darn thing to say about that. You know, we don't have any influence, and we don't have any influence because we have by accident, I believe, allowed our campaign finance structure to morph into something where money talks. And what we fundamentally want more than anything is to have votes count more than campaign donations, that the people speak and the people be represented. And right now that ain't happening. That's why there's more people who believe, you know, the Martians have landed than believe Congress is doing a good job. And I'm not kidding with those statistics. So, you know, it's important to us not that we go in a particular direction, but that we authentically identify and strategize what it is the people of the United States of America want in this republic's democracy. And so who would win what, you know, what position would win what cause? Who knows? Because we're not even allowed, you know, we're not allowed to have that conversation in a meaningful way. Thank you.
Wow, that was so much better than my answer. should have gone to you the first time. Joe, I'm gonna open up your mic again and just see if you have any other questions or comments. So your mic is hot.
Hello.
Yep, you're on.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
No, doesn't make sense to me at all. Because it's very, very vague, very ambiguous. It doesn't have any difference between the Democrat Party when any of their senators and congressmen go out on the campaign trail, and it doesn't sound any different from the Republicans. So to say that we're going to
look hold on, Joe, I don't understand. I just told you we're not a political party. What we're asking for is for those people who we those people who we vote for to go to Washington, D.C. and represent us. Not corporations, not lobbyists,
I heard that.
But represent the people. Which one of the two parties,
what's
Democrats or Republicans, are saying that on the which one of them are promising to do that?
All of them are saying that on the campaign trail. We want to listen to you. We're here to represent you. We're here to represent.
And which ones are doing it? Which ones are doing it?
Okay, none of them are doing it. But that's
well,
I'm
okay.
That.
We want them to do it. That's what we're trying
know,
to do is hold them accountable.
Hello, do you want my input or what?
Absolutely, but you're saying
okay.
We're being vague. I'm just trying to clarify for you
and
so
you're
we're not
vague
anymore.
Clarifying. Oh, boy. Look, if you're a salesman, you got to sit back and listen. Here's the thing. She's not saying anything different than what the campaign stumpers are saying. So my question is, how are you going to go about and do this in an effective way? In other words, let's say, for example, you're not a political party, but let's say you had your people in Congress. How would they go about listening to the people? Let's say in a community where there's 10,000 people, 9,000 are very, very poor, 1,000 are blue-collar, 500 are blue-collar workers, and 500 are white-collar workers. That means then that you would listen to the 9,000 who are very, very poor and then institute policies that would be for the majority of that community? Am I getting that right?
No.
Absolutely. No? Okay. Never,
no,
not at
absolutely.
All.
Hey, it's nice to know you guys are on the same page.
But we don't, again, we're not political equals. We have our own political
yeah,
views.
Right.
That's
okay.
Not what the
thanks
coffee party is about.
Never mind.
So I'll let Janine speak.
No. So my thing was just, I'm not going to give somebody a formula for representation. That's not the point. There are 100 good government groups in America today who are taking 100 different approaches to try to increase the accountability. So, you know, Represent Us wants to actually account for how many of our elected have made public statements saying, I support the Anti-Corruption Act. You know, we look and see who voted how on what bill. You know, it's not what people say. What people say, you know, talk is cheap. It's what they do. And so part of the Incite Civility and Reason is to actually use data and our communication tools to inform people. This is what's before the Congress. This is how your guy voted. Or here's where you go to find out how your guy voted. This is way, way, way beyond me telling guys once they're elected what do or how they do their representation algorithm. This is us saying information, transparency, the ability to actually hold people to account. And there's lots of things on the table that you may or may not ever hear about if you don't participate with, you know, us or someone with a similar attitude.
Yep, and I totally agree with you. And as our friend Greg Rusick pointed out, something I already knew. So that he, by the way, Joe left as soon as he stopped talking and unmuted his microphone. Joe left. So we all know Joe. Joe goes by Joe. He goes by Brown Beasley. He goes by the One Angry Jew. He's a troll. He trolls shows on Blog Talk Radio, and he tries to get people off topic. And I was so bad when he first came on my show. I was really terrible, and I just wasn't good at engaging him and getting what I wanted out of the show. And I it's nice to have you guys along a shotgun, but I feel like I've gotten a lot better with dealing with Mr. Joe or One Angry Joe, whatever his name is. And I think it's been an actual great training for me to how to deal with these guys, the mischief makers and the trolls. And so I thank him. I love when he comes on the show now because, like, I'm ready. Let's go, man.
Excellent.
And he's ground the show to the house anyway. Stephen has something to say. So let me open Stephen's mic, I guess, as soon as I find it. There we go. Sorry, Stephen. You're back with us.
No worries. No worries at all. I just want to say I feel like I did my message and myself and my Republican Party a disservice, possibly. It seemed to be some of the comments following my comments about how you deal with racism might have suggested that that's my approach to anybody who I might disagree with. Now, there's a difference between stupid and racist, in my opinion. And when I say you got to check stupidity wherever you see it, I mean, if somebody makes a blatantly obvious racist comes across with just something, you have to check it. You have to put it in check. If somebody comes across and says, hey, capitalism is running amok in this country, you know, we need to do something and make the rich pay their fair share, which is, you know, whatever. Okay, so I'll have that conversation. I'm not going to discount that person as stupid, but there are certain things in life that they take that appreciation are just stupid. And I think Joe, who I call One Angry Fool, who I am fascinated to finally hear his voice, because I guess I shouldn't say that. I was actually on a debate with him on a separate show. He is what we're dealing with, quite frankly. He is the problem, hands down. And if you've dealt with him, and this is what he does, and your description of him and your assessment of him is absolutely right, but in the hopes of trying to find what his concern is and trying to figure out what his gripe is, what is the difference, I think that what he's talking to is something that I was actually going to talk to, which is, you know, the problem is we have philosophical fundamental differences in how we approach the world. So there's been conversation about how we're all going to come together and we're going to give information and in my humble opinion, that doesn't work because we all look at everything from points of view. And if all you're trying to sell is that we need more information and more constructive dialogue, that's great, and I think most people would agree with that, but that to me doesn't speak to the underlying philosophical differences that are what the problem is. So, you know, it's great to think that we're going to have more conversations. And one of your someone mentioned that, you know, we're not about parties. I believe party trumps person. Okay? I don't believe party trumps principle, but I think party trumps person because of those philosophical differences. The left, and I'll tie it just left and right, and there's a lot of spectrums, and I appreciate that, but just, you know, it's left and right. The left, in my opinion, approaches it completely, completely different than I do. Completely different than I do. And I approach it completely different than they do. I mean, and just everything, the role of government, what's the best way to support the least among us? I think a fair assessment would say there's plenty of people on the left that say they want to help the least among us. There's a whole lot of people on the right. Why haven't we come together? Because we philosophically disagree. And until we address that philosophical disagreement and learn how to deal with those, and that does come through asking questions and being respectful and being reasonable and trying to find that common ground, but until we handle that and can we respect that, then it doesn't matter how much truth or how much information, how much data until that just, and I think that's one angry fool's comment, I think. But I don't know, because he's one angry fool, and he goes on a diatribe. But I think
I don't think he has a point. I think he's, like I said, I think he's just here to make mischief.
Yeah.
And
fair,
I think
fair
if
enough.
He said,
and
black,
I would agree
he'd
with
say
that.
White. If he said white, he'd say black.
I agree with that.
Hey, Dan, is my mic open?
Yes, it is, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. It's Debbie Lynn, Stephen, and I'm the one who made the comment you were speaking to, and I think it's even interesting that you heard it different than how I said it. And I just
we have problems, don't we?
Yeah, because, and I mean, this is it. This is the real work that we have to do. And so I just want to go back and say what I said was that transpartisan means putting country before party, not person before party.
But how do I put my country before my party if my party is what represents my values? And so to me, I am putting my country, just like everybody thinks that they're doing what's best for their country.
So I have a question for you. Do you think your party is always right?
Oh, God, no. I'm fighting my own battles over here. Absolutely not.
Right. And I don't know a Democrat that thinks that their party is doing right on everything either. And so for those... So that's the area where I want to play.
Fair enough. May I stop you just for a moment, though? May I stop you just for a moment? Maybe I'm not correct about this. But, for example, criticism of Obama. Like you talk about nobody in the Democratic Party thinks that they're right. Okay, I criticize Obama from the right. It seems that most in the Democratic Party, to me, criticize Obama from the left. So so it's fair to say that none of us agree completely with our party, but even within that, I disagree with my party because they're way over the top on social issues. But other people disagree with my party because they're way over the top, because they're not over the top enough on social issues. So, I mean, even within that, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But this is my point. Unless we sit down and ask each other questions and have that conversation, we can't find common ground because we're just mouthpiecing the party talking point. And when I sit down and I talk with somebody, it doesn't matter if it's the Pentecostal Christian sitting next to me on the airplane, which just happened recently, or whether it's my most liberal socialist communist friends, and I have people from that spectrum in my life. When I talk with them, we always have an engaging, deep conversation granted, that's the intent of the conversation when we're having it, that is meaningful to both of us, and there is mutual respect. And from that basis, I can then start to empathize with them, stand in their shoes, and see it from their perspective, which I couldn't do if I just have to put my party first or have to be right in what I believe, and I'm not willing to like set that aside for a moment to think about what is it like for somebody else from their perspective.
If I could step in here and try to referee a little, not referee, that's arbitrary, I don't know what. Let me clarify one thing, Stephen, because there's something that goes before when we talk about, if you go to our mission statement and our page there's something that comes before that, putting country above all, right, all else. And what it is it's not that we don't want to be partisan, and it's not that we don't want to follow our philosophies. It's that we don't want to be so stuck in them that we are just like our feet are in cement and we are not moving an inch from this position. Rising above the dogma of party, not the philosophy.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What does campaign finance reform mean to you? Because we both are here, and I'll say I want campaign finance reform, and you say, well, you want campaign finance reform. What does that mean to you?
It can stretch anywhere from transparency of contributions for all the 501c4s all the way up through public financing. This is me personally, not Coffee Party. Me personally, I just know something needs to shift so that we are not consumers of politics, that we are actually active citizens again. What does it mean to you, Stephen?
Okay. That was, I think, a fantastic, but with all due respect, kind of a generic answer, honestly. Campaign finance reform to me specifically means that there is transparency, that there is an equal playing field, which means that those people that say that they represent public interests do not get a pass. It means that I'm not afraid of someone who is able to give a whole lot of money to someone because they have more money, because philosophically I think everybody has a different break in how much money they're able to give. So campaign finance form means to me, I might allow more money as long as there's transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy, I have a podcast, so I have an unfair advantage to communicate. So there's to me, when I hear you say finance reform, you say, I've heard, like, get money out of politics. I think that's an impossibility.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, we want finance reform, but we want it in different ways. And I'm not saying we can't find common ground. And I'm certainly one who comes here as you know, trying to find a kumbaya moment for America. But at the same time, I think it's those, and that's I guess that helps us understand. And maybe this just goes back to the terminology we use, and maybe this just goes back to how we present ourselves. But
I think
the philosophical difference is what
experiment. I don't think that we have to have the answer. I think we could say, okay, let's try transparency. Let's see what happens. If that's not enough to make the playing field fair, then let's try something else.
And you both said transparency. So
absolutely.
Instantly, had common ground.
But she also said she spoke for herself. So does she speak for herself or does she speak for the Tea Party? Because it's those little things.
Tea Party.
I'm
sorry. Oh, geez. Oh, listen to the disdain. The Tea Party. Oh, my God.
What are you on, Steven?
Well, you are out of here. You know, hey, to my credit, I argue a lot with the Tea Party. Okay? To my credit, I argue a lot with all sides. Okay? So, but does she speak for the country? Because that's something that's simple. That's an easy, simple message. Campaign finance reform, just like the Coffee Party, just like the Tea Party, perception is reality. But transparency, that's an easy goal. And we might all seek to get there from different ways because of our different values. But transparency is a nice, reasonable thing we can hope to get for. And so then we really almost don't have to really – go ahead. I'm sorry. I mean, I just think that's better than campaign finance reform. That's a specific fundamental philosophy.
Right. So – but – Does anybody speak for the Coffee Party? No, nobody speaks for the Coffee Party when it comes to actually the nits, getting into the nits of the solution. We just know what we want. But it's not, again, it's, how about this? Coffee Party is about the journey as much as the destination. It's now let's all sit down at a big table, have some coffee or our favorite beverage, depending on what time of the night it is, and let's noodle this through and come to a conclusion as to what the best thing we can do. Because the fact of the matter, Stephen, and this is where I always go back to, is that none of us are going to get our way until the majority of us come together and force those people in Washington to do what we want them to do. As long as
we're
into 100 different groups, we're toast.
I agree. I preach on, brother. My page is torn. I'm with you 100%. But if we're having a conversation tonight about perception and optics of the Coffee Party, everybody wants transparency. Not everybody wants campaign finance reform because that means different things to different people. And if I'm on the right, what that means to you is different what it means to me. So I can't get behind you if you say you're finance reform because I think that means something different. And that's just how people are. But transparency, though, is an idea that everybody can get behind.
So,
well, good.
So Stephen, so what I'm hearing is that when we say campaign finance reform from Coffee Party, it sounds like a leftist thing because that's lefty language. But when we say transparency, that's something that's more transpartisan, if you will.
That's exactly it. My perception, I mean, I found the Coffee Party because I was trying to, because I'm getting people angry at both sides, so I'm trying to find friends on both sides. And so I perceive the Coffee Party as a leftist group. And I got with you, and I got with Liberal Fix, and in all the liberal shows on Blog Talk Radio. And to your credit, you were the most receptive, but I perceived you as a liberal group. And when I read the things that you say when you talk about finance reform, that to me is like, well, that's, I perceive that the left wants stuff only for them. I'd imagine as you perceive the right wants stuff only for them. And finance reform is something that Harry Reid talks about. And if Harry Reid talks about it, I probably don't like it. But transparency speaks to a philosophical goal, where we have different ideas on how we're going to get there, but we all want transparency.
Mm-hmm. So this has been, just for this comment, for this part of our conversation, Stephen, has been enlightening because I've known about this language thing for a while, but I don't often have those conversations about the language specifically. And maybe this is an area where we could start to do that.
I like words.
And can I also suggest something? Let me make a comment on something you said about left and everything being left. I believe that if you look at where we are, and I mean where our government has us, we have gone so far to the right in many, many aspects, in almost all aspects, that any quote-unquote fix is going to look lefty because we're just that far to the right in so
and
many aspects.
I fundamentally disagree, because to me the spectrum is less government on the right and more government on the left, and I want to be an arm's length away from anarchy. That's what I want. So there again is just an example. And believe me, I'm here on your show because you guys are trying to do it, man, and I respect that. But if we're talking perception, that's just another example of where, you know, maybe it's just that we have a lot of work together to do. Because we have to go to less government.
So you're telling me that, because you have a show called Move the Middle, and
yes,
you can plug it. It's on, give me, I always forget the days and times. What?
If I might plug it, this Thursday night from 9 to 11 Eastern, it is Brother Stephen's Traveling Salvation Show, Born Again in My Religion, That Which Is America, and I am raising the big tent to bring the glory and the glorious vision of America to everyone. Thank you.
Okay.
Amen.
I like words.
But here's the thing. So when you say move the middle, you think the middle is actually too far left as it stands?
No. See, this is I love the term move the middle, but I am spending at least half as much time explaining the name. Move the middle means move the middle of the conversation. And this is from one of my heroes who I won't even say that. I was going to say who a lot of you might hate, but I'm not even going to say that. One of my heroes, Newt Gingrich, and he sat on a bench with Nancy Pelosi to talk about green energy and to talk about the environment, and he caught hell from the right for it. And when talking about that, he said, you know what, if I'm not on that bench with Nancy Pelosi, then I'm not talking to Nancy Pelosi. And so I need to be on that bench because she's talking about something and I'm talking about something, but we're talking past each other. We need to move the middle of the conversation. And so I'm not trying to moderate anybody. And I don't want to, you know, Thursday night will be my thing, and if you want to hear, but I'm not looking for moderation from anybody at all. I want everybody to respect what being America means. And that starts with the preamble of the Constitution, and that says domestic tranquility and a more civil union and just all kinds of things I'm going to go off. I don't want moderation from anybody. I want people who have made value judgments and who are prepared to make that argument in good faith. And then let's learn.
So I have a question about that, and that is, it sounds like do you like to engage in the debate so that we can learn from each other from the debate, but you don't take the debate as a personal identity win-lose situation? That's kind of what I heard.
I'm sorry, what was that last part? As a personal?
Win-lose situation.
No, the debate is what it is. It's about it's about the foreplay. I mean, that's how I look at it. My wife says I think about two things, sex and politics. Okay. It's about the engagement. It's about the dance as far as I'm concerned. I want to make good faith representation of what I think. And for whatever reason it's set up, I'm on the right. I've got good arguments to make from the right, I think. I'm only as good as my argument as it can be beat. And I look at it from, I've got kids. If my philosophy in life and how I look at life is wrong, I'm teaching the wrong thing to my kids. So let's have that debate and show me where I'm wrong. And if we all want the same things, and I say if we all want what the Constitution says, then let's have that debate. But everybody's got to respect that even though they know, they don't know. Everything's taken on faith. And if we can start with there, and I fundamentally disagree with you, but I'm not going to look for the government to do it, because government is a subset of society. And if society can't solve it, when we put the problems that society has into the government, all we're doing is giving to the same people, only with guns and laws and taking our money. So Americans have to step up and have those conversations and then settle it amongst ourselves, because prohibition doesn't work. Government gets out of hand, whatever government does. And coming Thursday, I mean, that's my spiel.
I love it, Stephen. You know what I love about what you've said tonight? More than anything else, what I hear is that you are open-minded and receptive to new information. You're willing to defend everything you believe, and you're also open to new information. And to me, that is the epitome of being transparent. So
if that's... And I feel that from the coffee party, and if that's if and that's why I said I appreciate what you guys are trying to do. It's a hard work, and that's what I like about you guys and coming together in good faith. You know, that's if that's transpartisanship, then that's absolutely it. Because again, I'm only as good as my argument can be beat. And if you're a smart person and I trust you, and it takes mm-hmm. so much work to make good faith. And I say we have to work twice as hard as the press and the politicians and whatever interest group is trying to divide us, and there's so many people who want us to divide. We have to work twice as hard to find that common ground. But don't sell me what you know, and I won't try to sell you what you know. Let's just have a conversation and see what works.
Yeah.
But here's,
Dan, I want to do a plug.
A plug away?
Okay. So, Stephen, I work – the other thing that I do is I work with a group called Living Room Conversations, and this is co-founded by Joan Blaze of Move On. And one of our biggest champions is Mark Meckler, who co-founded the Tea Party Patriots. And the two of them have had living room conversations. And what living room conversations is a structured conversation that's unfacilitated, that's held by two friends, and each of them invite two more friends, so six, to gather in a living room and talk about the issue of the day that the co-hosts choose and select. And it is a way to have a conversation that's not debate, because debate scares some people if they don't have all their facts and everything in line. But it's a way to have a conversation that's a different type of process that actually enlarges relationship building and builds foundation so that we can start to tackle these tough issues. LivingRoomConversations.org, everybody. And Stephen, I want to have one with you.
That sounds awesome. That approach is awesome.
So just so you know, DL, I just posted the actual – there was a – at the John F. Kennedy School of – what was it, policy?
The Harvard, yeah.
I just posted a link to the YouTube video where they have those two people in a conversation discussing this. So if you want to know about living room conversations, yeah. It's a good piece to watch. It is an hour. So make sure you have some popcorn. But, I watched the whole thing today, and I was like, wow, that was great.
Exactly.
So Stephen, I have to ask you, because I want to make sure I'm not misunderstanding you, and that's another thing I do. I will ask questions until I am absolutely 100% positive that I know exactly what you're saying, because I think that's one of the problems people have in conversations. They'll hear something, and they'll fire back. And again, it's what Debbie Lynn said, right? She said, well, I don't think you heard what I said, right? Or you don't understand what I meant, or whatever the case was. So I like asking secondary questions. When you say I'm only as good as my argument, and if you can beat it, that's fine. My only worry is that that comes off almost as there's the binary outcome. It's a one or a zero. I win, I lose. You win, you lose. Is that the case, or is the can we have a 0.5 outcome?
You know, if I might, I'm having a, and I think this might answer your question. I'm having a battle on the right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's, you know, I'm from the right. I'm making that argument to them first. I think that they're taking the wrong approach on abortion. I have been making an argument that they need to abandon any attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade, abandon anything, any type of opposition to abortion in the first two trimesters. I make a good faith argument saying that, you know what, I think science, however it's going to settle it, is going to settle that argument. So if I think science is going to settle that argument one way or the other, then I want to have a candidate who is a Bible-thumping conservative who is a Republican who's going to stand on the floor and denounce abortion as a sin as he sees it, and then demand that we do military-style spending on prenatal care, because he believes that the more that a young girl might be able to scan, you know, to have an ultrasound of her baby that is then sent to her phone that she then tweets out, that she then goes to, so it's like this argument of if you feel it's death, then celebrate it by life, okay. And that to me then is a way of, he still has his moral objections to it. He still sees it as he sees it. Okay, but he respects the fact that prohibition doesn't work. He respects the First Amendment that says there will be no law instituting the establishment of religion. and he still wants to end abortion. And so give up the moral argument. Take it. And so the left says that we hate women. The left says that we're having this absurd war on women. And that's the only way I can phrase it. Okay, well, then let's undercut that argument. And let's attack what they say they want. And let's flood it with – and let's become sick about it. Everybody's screaming about it. And let's scream about it because we think that it's a sin, because we think it's murder. But then let's solve that problem. And let's take the time to do it. And in doing that – you knock down this knee-jerk reaction, this knee-jerk rejection to me because you think I am against abortion. And that somehow, well, you know what? I'm not. I'm pro-choice. And I'm also a man of faith, and I also believe in God, and I believe that he gave us free will, and so I'm going to give you free will. And that's one less obstacle for me being able to explain to you more what I think about, because my faith to me is more than this abortion argument. And so it's just this idea. And so I'm getting so much kick. That to me is a reasonable argument. I'm getting so much kickback from the right. And I've had battles with these people and where I'm like, you know what, damn it, this is the right way, and you're screwing us over. And these are people that I have good faith with. And through my experience in dealing with them, I finally got to the point, you know what, this is how I'm going to do it. You do it how you're going to do it. We both want the same objection. My argument's only as good as it can be beaten. That means if you show me a better way to get to my end result, then that's a better argument I can make to get to my end result. And so everybody's got their values about what they think about life, and everybody should challenge them. And I tell my kids, you know, at a point my kids said they loved Grandpa, but they didn't like him because he was a Democrat. And that was a gut check for me. And I teach my kids now, as soon as you turn, you have to do everything I say until you're 18. As soon as you turn 18, start questioning everything, especially me. I mean, so it's not an ultimatum. It's just a let's accept the limitations. Let's have the courage to believe that there are certain things we cannot change. And so I don't know. And now I'm getting off on a rant here. So that's, I don't know if that answers your question. I don't have an ultimate answer to that. It's just, let's have the conversation. Let's just do it in good faith. And you don't have to conform to my ideas. But if I have enough respect for you to change my ideas, then I want them changed, because I want to present the best argument for myself, for my family, for my kids, for my country.
But is it
that's
about,
my rant.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is, is it about, and this is Brother Greg, and I got Brother Greg's in the chats. He won't get on. I don't know why, but anyway, he's in the chats saying, well, it's, you know, if it's only a journey and there is no destination, then what's the point, right? So is it about ideas or is it about solutions? I mean, obviously you have to have the exchange of ideas so that you can get to the solutions. But as Greg would like to say, what next, right? What's next? What's the outcome? What is the tangible outcome?
No, and I'll say that quite frankly. America is an experiment. America is an experiment for a variety of reasons. We have stopped letting the experiment take place. The only objective is that we fulfill America, what I believe it was promised to in the Declaration, and what that speaks to, which is, again, a more perfect union.
Wait, I'm sorry. I got to stop you because you said earlier in the show that what you think America is and what I think America is could be totally different. So why do you get to define it, what America is, by saying it's what was promised in the Declaration and the Constitution? Why do you get to make that definition?
The thing is, I get to make that definition for myself, but I don't get to make it for you.
Okay.
I don't get to make it for you. That's the thing.
And what?
That's the point.
Look at
the Declaration of Independence.
Who says there are things in the Constitution that don't make sense for our time? They need to change. It's been changed 25 times already. So, you know, we know that what they wrote, you know, wasn't. This were not the Ten Commandments and the tablets written in stone. This is a living document. So I disagree with your interpretation of, well, and I don't know if it's yours, but I mean, there's some people, you know, that, oh, what the founder said, and this is what the Constitution said, and anything else is out of the question. How do you deal with those?
Well, I would disagree with you. I don't think it is a living document. I don't think that there's anything that needs to be addressed to it. I think what we need to address is how we address the Constitution in America. America was put forward as an idea. It was put forward as a utopian vision. And the moment they signed it, they were hypocrites of it. The moment they signed it, and they put forth values that we have never achieved. Okay, and we fought in a lot of wars, both quite literally and civil wars. We fought in all kinds of battles in order to try to achieve what America is. But somewhere along the way, we forgot that we have to achieve it. And it seems to me more people think that we scream about rights and rights and rights and rights and rights. Okay, but we don't have responsibilities. We think we live in America, as written in the Constitution, but we don't live in that America because we never got to it. And so you and I may disagree about the Constitution, and I would love to have that conversation. But the argument that I make, though, is that if you look at the preamble, which, again, speaks to a more perfect union. Okay, are we trying to get a more perfect union? We can have all the divides we need to have. But if we're going to say that we're Americans, we have to represent that the Constitution, in my opinion. And I think you would say there's things that need to be changed. I don't know what you're saying, but I'll make an argument that that's why we need to take back some of these laws. America is advanced citizenship.
So hang on one second. So Debbie Lynn's got to go, so I want to give her a kind of summation time. And then I'm going to come back to you, and I'm going to suggest that that's not what I said, and I'm going to restate it, and then we'll see what your reply is. But for now, DL, the floor is yours. And thank you so much for being here. This is awesome.
I know this is good. This is an awesome radio show, and I hate to have to go, but my dinner's just about ready out here on the West Coast. Stephen, I'm going to record your number and call you later, first of all, number one. Number two, I know of people who are constitutionalists who think the Constitution as it was written is perfect as it is, and I know people who think that the Constitution was meant to be a living document and update it, if you will. And I fall in the updated crowd. And I just think that even that conversation is so rich because, yes, because have we lived up to the ideals of the initial Constitution? Probably not, but that doesn't mean it doesn't need to be changed. And so I'm so interested in just having that conversation with you. I'm almost thinking about, like, how could we do a living room conversation about that? And so I look forward to it. I'm going to, like I said, Stephen, I'm going to write your phone number down. It's here on the studio board and give you a call. So thank you so much for showing up tonight.
I live in the West Coast time zone, even though I live on the East Coast. So if you're up this evening, I love doing this, and I'm going crazy trying to do stuff like this. So absolutely, and I look forward to talking to you.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. And good night, everybody.
Good night, Debbie Lynn. Thank you so much. Debbie Lynn Molyneux, co-host of Lunch with Loudon that airs every Thursday at noon on Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and also newest member of the Board of Directors of the Copy Party. So always love to have her on, the queen of transpartisanship and living room conversations. She's phenomenal. But getting back to what you said, I could not be more confused, so I'm sure I've got it wrong. So what I said is I didn't necessarily say things needed to be changed. I said it's a living document, and people who made it a living document are those exact people who made it. They gave us a procedure for amending the Constitution. Now, why would you do that if you thought it was perfect and would never need to be changed?
No, I absolutely fundamentally agree with that, 100%. I absolutely agree with that. Where I take exception is it's a living document, so we're going to take terms like the general welfare and extrapolate that beyond any type of reason to basically give the government as much power as it wants, and in that way usurping everything that the Constitution has done, which is to limit government. And they take a phrase like, and this gets back to terminology, you say a living document, I agree with you, yeah, we can change it, we should change it, we should follow the process and change it. But we shouldn't misinterpret it grossly out of context.
No, we shouldn't. That's SCOTUS's job.
And I'll say, yeah, thank you. And common ground once again. And I'll say that goes to the Second Amendment too. I'll say that goes to the Second Amendment too. There's restrictions on all of our rights, and we need to be reasonable about it. So there again, But I mean, how much work did this? If you and I hadn't had the conversation we've had in the past, I mean, how much work did it take to get to this point, man? We have got a serious battle ahead of us. We have got a lot of good work. I mean,
but we're doing it the right way. And again, for all of those people who are out there wondering what Coffee Party is like, that is about it. It is as much about doing it the right way so we can get there than the default today, which seems to be, you know, you line up on your side, I line up on my side, and we play bombardment, and I'm only trying to knock you out, and you're trying to knock me out. And that's in as much as our our issue stances that we take, making the process less that is what the Coffee Party is about. And we've been joined by area code 804. I believe this might be Mr. Greg. 804, your mic is open. 804. Area code 804.
John in Richmond.
It's John in Richmond. It's not Brother Greg. So John, if you're listening on your computer as well as on your phone, I need you to turn your computer off. There is a lag, and so it'll just echo. Beauty. John, welcome to the conversation. John from Richmond. What would you like to say or ask or add?
Well, I'll be real quick what I add, but I'll just let you know that the first Richmond party or Richmond coffee party groups I attended. I actually got tagged as the media spokesperson for a very short time, and then have kind of followed and participated from afar. So I have listened to the show before, and I'm enjoying tonight's show while I was doing other things and eating. And I just wanted to ask this question for those who are still on the call, at least talking, and those maybe who are listening. I don't recall exactly who did this in which prior election, but there was an effort to have an online issues-based conversation, and a number of individuals put themselves forward as potential candidates, who spoke to these issues, and it was basically an online voting, if you will, and being recorded as these are the issues that are important to people, and it cut across, obviously, all of the full spectrum of whatever we want to call it. Passion, partisanship, whatever. So I'll just stop there and see if anyone here.
Was this a coffee party exercise?
No. I think it actually started as a graduate school project that then became something much larger and was funded by somebody who had a particular an interest in politics. I think he was actually a disaffected Republican, if I recall correctly. But that's all I can recall, and I haven't spent any time tonight to look it up again.
Well, unfortunately, and this is really very unfortunate, we've lost our two longtime Coffee Party members. I've only been a member for a couple of years, so this must predate me. So unfortunately, Debbie Lynn or Janine probably could have told you exactly what you were speaking of and clarified this, but unfortunately, I don't have that tribal knowledge, as it were. Sorry.
Okay.
Is it something you think we should repeat, or is it something you enjoyed? Because I'm all about taking suggestions for actions. John? We're having issues, technical difficulties with John. John from Richmond, are you there? Is it me? Am I there?
You're there.
Can you hear me? Okay, good.
I can hear you.
It's AT&T.
Okay. John from...
That's AT&T for you.
Is that it?
No, I'm here.
Is that John?
Yes, it's AT&T.
Okay.
Apologizing.
No, that's okay. No worries.
I'm not even going to bother the story. I'm actually as close to four cell towers as you can be. I'm just in the in between four circles.
The government handed out a very, very, very limited number of licenses and continues to do that, choking competition, which means we pay more for our cell service than a lot of other people, countries do. And with less competition, where is the incentive for it? Not only less competition, but the whole collusion of the industry finally my guys decided no contracts, right? So, I mean, the whole industry is set up by the government at the behest of the lobbyists and these companies to make sure that we pay more and that they don't have to care about service. And it's probably double for the cable industry. If you've ever had to deal with Comcast, you'll know that they're probably the worst.
Unfortunately, I do.
Yeah. So Anyway, that was my little rant. So I guess back to what I was asking you is this exercise that you went through that I'm not familiar with, is it something you'd like to see happen again?
Well, I'm open to as many ways to address the problems that have you all have spoken to well this evening. There is clearly much more that everyone in this country, the people, have in common with issues than we have as differences, I believe. And the only way I can think in this day and age to more quickly represent that is with the internet before, as a utility, it gets turned over entirely to corporate greed, which it appears if, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert on net neutrality, so I'm just going to leave that out there. But my feeling is that we ought to use our electronic communications to, and the coffee party, at least it appears to me anyhow, one voice of sanity, reason, and so forth, from which we could collect these issues that people have in common, or at least represent how many people who take the time on their own time to read and vote, you know, what percentage of people share the language of a particular issue where someone has taken the time to say, this is my pet issue or something I'm an expert in, so let me write the language of a question so it's, you know, not leading to a particular, you know, as polls can do, lead to a certain response. But more, this is exactly what we recommend should happen to this law, so on and so forth, issue by issue.
So I'm all for it. If you wouldn't mind, if I could ask one favor of you, the show has an email address. It's P as in Paul, well, P as in press, 1 as in the digit 1, F as in 4, and D as in democracy. It's P1FD at moancomcast.net. So if you can shoot your question over to me as an email, I will go back to those with much more history than I, and I will find the answer, and then we'll have your coordinates, and we'll get back to you. And if it's, you know, it sounds intriguing, I definitely would like to explore it more. I think it would be a fun thing to do. We can also leverage this platform as well, obviously. It sounds like a fun exercise, so I definitely want to look more into it.
Okay.
So I appreciate your call. Thanks, John. Thanks for being a longtime Coffee Party member, and hope we're doing well by you, and we hopefully will continue to improve up and to the right.
Excellent. Well, thanks, and let's all keep doing well by one another. We all share the same watershed, name of our company, and we share the same air and earth and everything. And it's about time we start acting cooperatively, which I'll put my little plug in here for Darwin. Darwin's Origin of Species didn't focus on the survival of the fittest. It mentioned hundreds of times to just a couple mentions for that phrase. It mentioned cooperative or the cooperation between species hundreds of times. That's what we need. Thank you.
Hey, no, I appreciate it. I agree with you. There are things that we can do as individuals, and there are things we can do better as in a cooperative way. Striking the balance is, as far as I'm concerned, the prime goal of what our government should do, and it's what our government should be. We don't necessarily agree where the balance is, but what we can do is keep having meaningful, respectful conversations, and we can get to where, I mean, we can't please everyone, we know that. But we can get to where we can do the most good for the most people, and get agreement on the way that most people would want us to do that. And I think that's what Coffee Party is about. That's what we're here for. We're here to pitch a big tent. We're here to capture and record as many ideas as we can. And again, to look for those common ground issues that we can agree on and work towards solutions toward them. So. With that, I'm going to thank all of my wonderful call-in guests. I think it's been a really fun show tonight. We had Debbie Lynn Molyneux and Janine Loudon from the Board of Coffee Party Board of Directors, and as well as from the Thursday show, Lunch with Loudon, which airs at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We had Stephen Vandergast, who has his show, Move the Middle, which is on Blog Talk at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. You can catch him from 9 to 11. Very engaging. Thank you, Stephen, for your participation. We had Mary Ann Cullen from Tampa Bay as well as John from Richmond, Virginia. So with that, this is Dan Aronson. You've been listening to Press One from Democracy. Please come back every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and join us, and better yet, call in. When you do, press one and join the show and the conversation. So with that, have a great week, and we'll see everybody next Monday.
I'll be sitting the evening come, watching the ships roll in. Then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah. Sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide. Thank you.